US President Donald Trump earlier this month signed an executive order to wean the country away from China's dominance in critical minerals. India has also been running a national critical minerals mission to establish a hold in this space. But is it enough, and can China's new export control orders on rare earth metals open the door for a China plus one strategy in the field? Welcome to Beyond Averages, our weekly data podcast. We have with us Abhijit Kulkarni, Senior Partner, Metals and Mining, EY Parthenon, and Rajeev Mehta, Partner, Deloitte India, to discuss China's dominance in critical minerals and the way forward for India. But first, let's take a look at some of the data surrounding critical mineral trade before we go to our experts. Now, if you look at India's critical mineral exports, it stands somewhere here at $1.1 billion. Compare it to China, and China is about at 131 billion, over 100 times more than India. Germany is about 70, and Korea is about at 40. China dominates aspects of this trade as well. If you look at it, processed minerals, China has a 58.7% share. Battery pack, China has a 50% share, and its entire share in the market is about a third. EVs, it has a 20% share, and battery material, it has a 20.8% share. Now, how it moves is from processed minerals to battery material to battery pack, and then the final product of an EV. More important, let's compare how India and China's exports are different. Now, this is a percentage of their total exports in critical minerals. If you look at raw materials, India 23.1% share is going to raw materials. Then processed minerals is about 8.7, and battery material is 54.1 for India. For China, that's about 1.8, 6.3 and 11, much lower than India. But here it's where the game changes. For China, 50.4% of its trade comes from battery packs and about 30.5% from EVs. So in its entirety, while India exports more raw materials, China exports more finished products. Let's go to our experts to understand what's happening in this space. Abhijit, first to you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
India's critical mineral exports are minuscule compared to China. Can the country hope to establish a domain in the sector?
I think we don't have a choice. We have to establish a foothold. And not because China is doing X or somebody else is doing Y, because this is critical from not only the energy transition that's taking place and will be important for the next 10 to 50 years, but also for defense, electronics and space, given the overall geopolitics in the world that is shaping up. You showed figures for China. Fact of the matter is China started 15, 20 years before. So the starting position is different. And therefore, my sense is not right to compare it on one chart. But what can India do? And how can we sort of now leapfrog going forward? And I look at it in terms of three or four horizons. One is to say what kind of strategic first horizon is all about stockpiling, which is what kind of strategic partnerships can India do, particularly with nations like Africa, US, the South America, Australia, and Russia, which are the main mineral bearing countries, both in mining and in processing. I think that will be an important element that we need to push forward. The second horizon is where you look at, and all these horizons, by the way, think about it as happening parallelly. Part of the work starts happening today, results start coming later. So the second horizon, which is more about looking at assets abroad, go and acquire assets which can then feed into our refining capacities. Third stage is where India, both in exploration as well as in processing, builds up its capability over the next 5 to 10 years. And finally, the fourth stage where you leapfrog. So it's a journey now between now to the next 10 to 20 years. It won't happen overnight.
Rajeev, let me get to you. But before that, let me get to the chart here. And welcome to the show here. If you look at raw materials, India is ranked 9th. If you looked at processed minerals, India is ranked 13 in the world in terms of global exports, and battery materials, we become 21. So while we are 9th in the world in export of raw materials and 13th in processed minerals, we start lagging when it comes to intermediate and final product. What can be done? How can that be tackled according to you?
Thanks, Ishan, for having me here. And I think this is a very valid question. And before that, I would like to touch upon what are the learnings from China. I mean, Abhijit mentioned about some of the learnings that China has done. So two facts. One is of China has significant share of global production in its own country in terms of critical minerals. Like today, if I look at graphite, I would say almost 80% of global graphite production happens in China. Similarly for tungsten, 83%. So one of the learning from China is that they have, mining is at scale, you know, large mines and so on. The second part is they have invested almost $57 billion over the last 20, 21 years, from 2000 till 2002, that's the data. And in the last, in 2023, there was a, article by, economists, which say the Chinese company, they have invested almost $16 billion in foreign mines. So access to assets is one important learning from China. And second is, of course, mining at scale. The third is, of course, they have invested a lot in infrastructure and as well as in value-added products. For example, if I look at, in copper, we have copper and copper ore and concentrates. China only exports around 0.04 million USD of copper, 114 tons. They are exporting almost, 4.5 billion dollars of copper cathodes, which is the refined copper. So clearly they're focusing a lot on, value addition, which you clearly mentioned in your charts. Now, I think what is the important thing? How can India leapfrog China? It's one, of course, the development of downstream processing facilities, which is important because the National Critical Minerals Mission, it talks about investments in downstream facilities, in processing parks. The second part is the government has already clearly laid out that there's minimum zero duty on imports of critical minerals. So there's no inhibition or hindrance towards setting up these facilities. I think more important is if you look at some of the incentives that are being provided beyond the critical minerals mission, some of the global policies like, if I look at Australia, they have critical minerals production tax incentive, which kind of refunds around 10% of non-refundable tax credit. Yeah. Similarly, the PLI for some of these, critical minerals processing would be very important to have India in the global front in terms of processing. So clearly, I think there's a lot of initiatives undertaken by the government, and this is all augured well for the industry overall.
Abhijit, you were saying something in between regarding India's position. Do tell us what you were talking about.
No, I was saying that about $1.3 billion of critical minerals that we export today, only about 25% is the more refined and high-end products, value-added products. 75% is still primary. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this is copper and aluminium. And that needs to change. Because China is 80% high refined products export against 25% of. Now, how that needs to change? Three things. One is the private sector has to invest, and they are. Hindalco, for example, Birla Copper, Vedanta Aluminium. So on copper and aluminium, a lot of these private players are pitching in, and a lot more needs to be done. But that needs to be fast tracked. However, on the battery minerals and the other part, the defense and the aerospace space, things that I talked about, we lack in technology. And that is where the real partnerships will come from. Even rare earths, for that matter. I think GMDC is trying to put a very interesting thing on the table. But the constraint comes in refining and processing. And how do we do that? China basically controls this. And it takes, and the technology is not something that you just go and buy off the shelf. It is pretty iterative, depending on the ore and the end product that you want. And it takes 10, 15 years to refine this. China has done that. How can we do that and basically fast track, not take 10, 15 years, is do a set of strategic partnerships with advanced metallurgical institutes, and they are there in Kazakhstan, in South Africa, in the US, go after them, get that technology, have the partnerships, bring that into India, and do this in literally 5 to 10 years. That will be the main thing, backbone of making those exports.
You've taken away my next question from me. Let me show you some data first. I'm sorry, Rajib, just let me get back to you in a while. So India's imports of critical minerals, if you look at it, has about jumped about 11 times during this last 10 years. More important, if you look at it, it's still reliant a lot on finished products. Now, you would assume that over a period of time, in a decade or so, India would rely more on the raw material so that it can produce its own finished product. But you look at it here, 67.9% in FY24 from about 43.6% in FY18. In terms of battery material, we've gone from 40.8% to 24.6%. Raw materials is 10.8 to 3.2, while processed mineral is 9 to 4.4, and all of it comes from China, at least most of it. It was 56.3% prior to the pandemic. Now it's 72.8% in terms of battery packs. In battery materials, it's gone from 17.8% to 19.4%. Processed minerals from 31.5 to 39.1, and raw minerals from 25.6 to 30.5. Now, going to you, Rajib, you were saying something, right? A part to it as added is, where can we look for partnerships regarding this trade?
Right, I think that's a very important question that you have. And if I look at the point that Abhijit mentioned, technology transfer is going to be a key in terms of developing the downstream facilities. But if I look at imports, I know India imports almost $5 billion of more than that, and 42,000 crores is the import bill of critical minerals. But if I look at the recent trends in terms of imports, lithium carbonate, which is used for the manufacturing of lithium cells, 25% of imports was from China, but remaining imports were diversified from US, Belgium, Germany, Chile, Canada, etc. Chile and Japan, for example, they have come about as sources for imports. Similarly, if I look at 38% of lithium oxide and hydroxide are sourced from China, remaining are diversified. So clearly, I think some of these geographies, like if I look at Chile, especially for say some of the critical minerals, Australia has a partnership, which is a very close partnership with India. They are emerging as a key source of critical minerals like nickel oxide and hydroxide. There has been upsurge in Australia import from Australia. Clearly, that is one area that where we are diversifying. And there are partnerships available. For example, India has several partnerships, be it the Quad, be it SCRI, which is supply chain initiative, Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity, IPEF, and India-Australia Critical Minerals Investment Partnership. These all are contributing for the resilience in supply chain in terms of sourcing beyond China. And globally also, all the countries are moving to China plus one for their supply chain diversification. And clearly India, along with these countries, and especially with countries like South American countries like Chile, recently we had a MOU with Chile, then Argentina, and more importantly, the African countries like Zambia, Namibia, Congo, Ghana, Mozambique. These are coming about as one of the key countries for both investments as well as partnerships or collaboration for the Indian critical minerals industry.
Abhijit and Rajib, going back to you first, Abhijit, then Rajib. When you talk about technology transfer, one thing that comes up to my mind is there enough R&D in the field? Right, so do we need to do more R&D in terms of carving out more niches? And two, there's a talk about recycling components as well. Is that a field that we can get into where we recycle more so that we can get more out of our buck? Abhijit first.
No, I think on both, your short answer is yes. This is not an or problem to be solved. It's an and problem to be solved. I think all elements have to be done together. So while we do partnerships early on, I think the backbone of building that R&D in India is very, very critical. Both the government and the private sector will have a role to play in this. Private sector needs to do much more than what they are doing today. I think the only way to do it is start with those partnerships, let the exchanges happen, and then build it in-house purely for more profits. I think that's the way capitalist world understands and works. That's what will happen in India. On the second question, which is recycling, I think is very, very critical, because as you see, most of these, think about all these elements which are coming, whether all the way from silver to copper to even aluminium for that matter, steel, which is not necessarily a part of critical minerals per definition, but recycling will start playing a very important role in adding to the supply crunch, which will happen in many of these critical minerals. And therefore, that this is one place where we can be ahead of the curve, set up units, take help of countries and partnerships outside, and make something at scale in India.
Rajib, going to you, there was a time in the 90s, I remember, where we didn't do shipbuilding. China did shipbuilding very well. Even Donald Trump talked about it. But we did ship repairing. We never moved one step ahead of that. Do you think this is the right time to invest in all these recycling components and also more in R&D? Also, adding to that point, what can the government do to actually help push this R&D?
Yeah, thanks, Ishan. So if I look at, let's look at recycling. So clearly, I think recycling is a focus area for the government. And there is the under National Critical Minerals Mission, there's a target in terms of 10% of critical mineral use for recycling. So that 400,000 tons of recycled critical minerals are produced annually. So there's a fund, a budget allocated of 1,500 crores for incentive scheme for mineral recycling and pilots, another 100 crores. Similarly, R&D, there's a lot of investments as well as promotion by the government in terms of the startups. Even the NCMM talks about R&D. They have allocated around 1,000 crores along two buckets. So clearly, I think there's a lot of focus, but I think the private sector needs to come forward along with the government schemes are already there. And there needs to be a vibrant ecosystem where the academia, the private sector and the government, they come together, and thereby both on the recycling front, there are various success stories in India for recycling and critical minerals. Similarly, for R&D also, some of the cutting edge work is happening across Indian academias and institutes. So clearly, I think there's I can clearly see a lot of developments as well as positive outcome going forward.
Now, when we are talking about geopolitical developments, Abhijit, first to you, then to Rajib again. What do you make of China's export controls? I was reading an article over the weekend and it suggested that India could indeed have been present with an opportunity, especially with these export controls in terms of establishing supply chains. You just talked about Australia. We can get more from Australia and other countries, given that there's this China-US trade tension. So does this open the door for a China plus one strategy within the critical mineral space?
And the simple answer again is yes. First, let's look at what China is doing. I wanted to emphasize on this antimony, and I'm taking an example of antimony, which is used in explosives, cartridges, a critical mineral. And China controls 80-85% of this. They have significantly over the last few years dropped exports of this strategically. And therefore, it becomes very important. Now, not only is it is a China plus one, but also for maintaining balance overall in the geopolitical order, I think we need to think about balance of saying how some of these minerals can be both produced and processed, and how can we sort of balance some of these very critical minerals that come. Secondly, I think as China closes down on some of these for its own benefits, it does present an opportunity for India, purely because we have good resources, we have good mining engineers, we have good technologists, and we have, good capabilities to be able to take this and do the production at scale. That is how I feel that a lot of these things, the refining part of which I'm sort of emphasizing time and again, can be fast-tracked and can be produced at scale in India.
Rajib, over to you on this question.
I think Abhijit mentioned about antimony. Now I'll give an example of gallium. And of course, China Plus One is an opportunity for India. And probably this opportunity, there's a limited time period. We need to capture some of the opportunity globally and in other countries. So if I look at gallium, the total production in China is around 99% of global. Gallium goes into very strategic, as a raw material for strategic end users in terms of defense and others. So clearly, I think if I clearly look at gallium, which is also part of the export control, India, gallium comes from the byproduct of aluminium. India produces almost four plus million tons of aluminium. And alumina is even higher. It's part of the alumina. So, Gail, I think what is coming about is all these are opportunities, and we need to invest in extraction of these minerals, be it from Indian mines, global mines, and also from a recycling and as a byproduct, from our other industries. So I think this is an opportunity, and we need to capture it well and quickly. That's what, and in the industry, the private sector, public sector, and academia, again, I'm repeating this point, they need to come together to capture this window of opportunity.
Talking about the quickly part, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Let me mention a figure to you. Right, if you look at it, in 2020-21, about 95 exploration projects is what the government had taken. Right, switch to 24-25, and this has grown about 3x, right, to 165, if I'm not mistaken. 195, actually, if I'm not mistaken. Also, if you look at rather double to 195, government is planning about 1200 projects to be explored within the National Critical Minerals Mission. The time period though for this is 2030, right? 4 years. Do we have 4 years, Abhijit, or do we need to move faster with partnerships and other domains?
I think the reason I started and I'm emphasizing on partnerships is exactly this. See, an exploration cycle, it's not a 4 year cycle. It's a 10 to 15 year cycle before which anything can come into production. So these are parallel things. If we don't increase the exploration today, we should have started this 20 years back. But better late than never. Deir aaye, durust aaye. We have to fast track that. Has to happen. But in the meantime, to what Rajiv said, given that we have to do it quickly, it only can be done right now, immediately through partnership. The technology, do it in collaboration. Countries which are friendly, Russia is friendly, Australia is friendly, US is friendly, Africa, South Africa is friendly, South America is friendly. These are the nations, these are the places where these minerals are available. And therefore, if you are able to get that fast track quickly, that is what will make the difference. Exploration and everything else is the horizon 2 or 3 that I was talking about in the beginning. It's not horizon 0 or 1.
Rajiv, what's your opinion on this? Rather go for friendshoring more or wait for 5 years and then start developing something? And do we have that much time?
No, I think this has to happen simultaneously. It's not a one, it's an and problem and answer rather than an or answer. So I think one is, of course, collaboration with some of the countries that already we have forged very strong relationships, including South America and African intergeography, as well as Australia are some of the examples. But also we need to focus on the domestic exploration. And clearly the government has a very strong target as well as very robust target of 1200 plus, I would say, exploration blocks over the next 5 odd years. So I think both need to be tackled. Both need to be tackled fast. And whatever needs to be done is already, if I look at some of the auctions that have happened, 22 odd blocks have been auctioned very successfully, and there's a lot of interest among bidders. So I think this augurs well. But again, we need to act, expedite a lot of things, including technology for, I would say, mining, exploration mining. How do we do transfer of that? How do we bring more global players? The exploration license, which the government came about recently, which is a very positive step, which kind of talks about how do I incentivize, private exploration company, including global exploration companies, to invest and to bring the right technologies. Yeah, so I think these are positive steps.
I was reading this book, The Material World, and the idea is that this mad rush for green technologies is more damaging for the environment. One, would you concur with that hypothesis? And two, what more can be done in that regard? Can we look at more technologies that do this extraction in a better, in a more greener manner? Abhijit, we can go to you first.
So I think, again, it is a question of balance there. We need these minerals, and extraction does take its toll. But the way to look at it is, how can I make it minimal harm to the environment? And there are enough examples both in India and outside. And I'll take an Indian example of these, of Coal India, in the Chhattisgarh area of mines, the Dipka Gewda Kusmunda. It is one of the largest coal sectors in the world, I think, which sort of gets 100 plus million ton of coal from that one location. But they have been able to get more afforestation than what they, or the trees that they cut. The way they have handled the water pollution, water ingress, all of that, I think is an example for all of us to say that mining need not just happen by destroying environment. Mining can happen in a net positive way, and we should do that. The last thing I'll say is, amongst all the polluting industries, actually, the carbon emissions, mining industry, by the way, has been the lesser, relatively lesser carbon emissions. A lot of it only comes from the mining equipment, which is diesel operated. So one big change where you move to electric vehicles within mining can make it much more greener than any other processing industry. Think about processing industry always will have higher carbon emission. The mining will still have lower carbon emissions. So that's one game changer that needs to be put in place.
Rajiv, what's your view on this?
Yeah, I think I'll put the problem into two parts. One is the mining and exploration. The second is the processing part. So if I look at mining and exploration, clearly, I think all these critical minerals, most of these are deep sea minerals. And then we need underground mining. And underground mining is a very, very environment friendly mining. And of course, electrification of fleet is one very positive approach in that direction. Now, if I look at similarly, go to the processing part. So just take the example of titanium. So titanium processing, if I look at titanium value chain, you have beach sand minerals and thereby you go to slag and then to metal. So there are two routes to it. One is the chloride route and the sulfate route. Clearly sulfate route is a cheaper one, but of course has environmental hazard. But the chloride route established globally as a very, very robust and environment friendly. But of course the technology availability is a problem. Again, technology transfer comes here. Can we get the right technologies to support our environment? And to be more, I would say, environment friendly, it's something that we need to look at. So I think these are some of the, I would say, points that I would like to make in this regard.
So India needs to move fast. It needs to balance out the objectives. And there's a lot of opportunities friendshoring. Thank you, Abhijit and Rajiv, for coming on the show. It was great having with you us. And we hope to see you again very soon, given how the space is changing. Thank you. India's critical mineral journey still has some places to go, but the US and China trade war does provide the country with a slight advantage. How it leverages that is important. More important would be how we tackle the R&D concerns. We'll be back next week with more news and analysis. Until then, thank you and goodbye.